Blog Talk Radio.
Shemalek ma'ilama, shemahezahilma, sol nashen vorat fed hakuigem ma'ilma.
Smart fight, but he didn't lose that fight.
That's all I can say. De La Hoya has replaced Don King now. Now we're in a new era. So
yeah, that's for sure.
And all the guys that picked, I picked Triple G, and you guys all picked De La. You guys all picked Canelo. So
great.
Looks like you guys were right in one way, but how did you see it, Frank?
You gonna be able to come on?
How did you call it?
Okay. No, he's not on either. That's why I was wondering.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, it was Ty. He's calling in from New York. Everybody seems to have a different opinion. And, you know, I looked at the fight, and you know, I go by the compu numbers. He did land more punches and lost the fight. I wasn't really sure how the crowd reacted to that one, or how the judges reacted to it, but it certainly was not a fair shake for Triple G, that's for sure.
I don't think he fought a smart fight. I was disappointed that he didn't go to the body. I do not know why he just forgot. All he kept trying all night was jab, jab, right hand, jab, jab, right hand.
Right.
Well, they were landing. I mean, he was winning with that combination. But why did he – it just mystifies me why he gave up on the body punch, the left hook to the liver, which was a killer punch. And he hardly threw it. I don't think he threw more than one or two body punches the whole damn fight. Good left hooks, which disappointed me, because I thought Canelo was right in front of him all night. He didn't try to move away from him. He stood right there. I mean, you can't ask more than that.
Right.
You know, for the Russian. I mean, he didn't run and hide. He did stand his ground and fight Triple G. At his own game, but I think he lost. But you know, I was waiting for Teddy Atlas to come on, but they didn't have him anywhere near that television.
Yeah.
They didn't want him sounding off. You know how he sounds off on bad decisions. But I'm anxious to see a rerun tonight and see what the hell they say.
What do you think, Ty?
Watching the fight live, I scored it for Canelo. I thought he won 7-5. I thought he was the clear aggressor throughout the fight. And in fact, there came a point in the fight where it looked like he was forcing Gennady Golovkin to wilt. So honestly, I really thought that he did an admirable job, specifically the fact that he stand in front of the bigger man and he continued to pound the body. Dr. Chris, you were talking about Gennady Golovkin looked like he only threw 4 or 5 body shots, when the fact of the matter is he only landed for the duration of the fight 6 body shots. The first fight with Canelo, he only landed 8. So in the duration of 2 fights, he's only landed 14 body shots against Canelo. I think it comes to the point where we have to say nothing's wrong with Triple G. It has something to do with Canelo, his defense, and the fact that when Gennady commits to attacking the body, it leaves his chin open. And Canelo's so adept with his defensive, his slipping, and his countering that I think it leaves Gennady a little reluctant to leave his chin open by attacking the body.
Well, I naturally everybody can see the fight different, but a left hook to the body. If you drop your left hand down low, you are vulnerable to counter rights. There's no question about it. But I don't think where I think Triple G could have leaned left a little bit, thrown out body hook. He had every opportunity. Canelo was giving him the opportunity to get off first. And he never did.
Yeah.
He jab, and right hand. Jab, right hand. His corner man did not have a good game plan for him. That's how I feel. But,
Well, you know what? Abel Sanchez said that he wanted Gennady to fight. He said that. He said, I wanted him to fight, but he chose the box. He said, when a man is getting punched in the ring, he's going to make the decision to perform in the manner that he thinks is best. And he felt that, you know, he wanted Gennady to fight. He wanted Gennady to be more aggressive. He thought he goaded Canelo Alvarez into standing in the middle of the ring as opposed to circling and, you know, fighting off the back foot. He felt that the game plan to goad Canelo into wanting to fight, quote-unquote, Mexican style had worked, but Gennady didn't take advantage of it. And what I've noticed is, as you know, I mean, Gennady Golovkin has a – Triple G has a tremendous chin, right? But as good as his chin is, the one thing I've noticed is that he does care about the shots coming in. He doesn't want to walk necessarily through fire to land his own shots. And what he wasn't able to do, he wasn't willing to attack the body because he didn't want to give up the counter shot. So as good as his chin is, he still is the kind of guy who – you know, he's a boxer who wants to hit and not get hit. He's not a Jake LaMotta who's like, look, I have to, you know, take two to land one. He's not that guy at all. He really is not that kind of fighter. And when the fight got tough, he actually made a case for winning it, you know, for those that thought he won it, using his amateur pedigree. So.
Well, you know what? I mean, he's got a trainer, and his trainer, you know, decided what their game plan was going to be. I think it was the wrong one. And, you know, that's my opinion. I think his new trainer or the trainer doesn't know what the hell he's doing. I hope he's listening to me right now.
Well, if he's listening to you, he won't
better,
come on our show, Dr. Chris.
I think Gennady better get a new trainer if he wants to win any big fights, because he gave away the you know, when he was body punching a lot with that left hook against pretty damn good fighters and pretty damn good counter punchers, when he was winning, I thought he was one of the best middleweights of all times. Not anymore. If he's going to continue to just be a straight, jab, jab, right hand, jab, jab, right hand. Even the left hook was never even a third punch in his combination. I mean, he didn't throw the left hook behind the. If you've got a chance to throw a right hand, you should always finish the combination with a left hook of some type. The guy's giving you an opportunity to get off. You got to take advantage of it. But he never did. He never threw the third punch as a body punch. You have less chance of getting hit with right hands if you continue the, to finish your combination. But he never did. So I think either he's slipping. I don't know what his mental state is that he's afraid to get countered. I don't know. I mean, he did get banged around a lot in the last couple of rounds. He had a nice cut.
You know,
of
honestly, Dr. Chris, what I honestly think it is, and I'm going to be honest, is Zito and I talked about this the other day. I think it's quite simple. It's the competition level. I think when he was fighting the Gregory Proskas of the world and the Dominic Wade's of the world, he's throwing those punches. He's looking like an all-time great middleweight. But the moment he started fighting slightly better competition, you know, Danny Jacobs, who is not a great middleweight, but a good, solid middleweight, big, strong middleweight, Canelo, who, again, his first fight at middleweight, but is accomplished at 154. I think what's happened is once we've seen the competition level step up, we've seen Triple G's, you know, to a certain extent, his ceiling, his limitations. To me, it's no surprise that the things we were seeing that at one time had him in consideration for being an all-time great middleweight, we stopped seeing the moment he started fighting elite level, not even really elite, but really good competition. And I think that's just what it's come down to. The competition's a little bit better, and we're seeing, you know, the limitations of his game. That's what I honestly believe. Because everybody said he was slipping because he didn't knock Danny Jacobs out. Then they said he's definitely slipping because he didn't knock Canelo out. Well, then he fought Vanus Medeiros, and he knocked him out in two rounds. So, again, he looks a certain way against a certain competition. Once the competition rises, then what we see is that this guy is not just a destroyer. He's a guy who has a well-rounded tool set that allows him to be able to outbox opponents. But I think we found his level as far as being an all-time great.
You know what? You almost have to, you kind of almost have to agree with you. Because that's the way it looks on paper. When he gets against really stiff competition, he doesn't do as good, you know.
Just about every fighter, yeah.
That's every fighter, you know, the part of the competition. That shows you what you're made of. I don't think he'll be ranked now in history as one of the all-time great middleweight champs now because of his inability to step up when he had to. Against good competition. And Canelo surprised me He didn't run. He didn't hide. He stood right in front of Triple G. Gave him every opportunity to be blasted. But he stood right there. I mean, he held his own. But I just don't understand it. I, you know, when you hit these mitts, when you work on the mitts all the time, you lose that third punch in the combination. Because the mitts, you just tap. And you kind of get away from digging to the body. Because the mitts are up in the air. I really feel that way. If you train, you want to train a body puncher, you train him different than you do a fast puncher, a guy with hand speed.
That's a good point.
Canelo doesn't have great hand speed. He doesn't have great hand speed, but he had great power. And I think he's trained wrong, and his chance to become, one of the all-time greats is over now. I think he's history because he looks like he's not going to go back to the body. I mean, when he fought some good competition, and when he fought the guy with the funny hair, what the hell is his name?
David Lemieux.
Lemieux. When he fought Lemieux, I mean, that was a good competition. That guy's a tremendous right-hand puncher.
He's not a tremendous fighter, though, Dr. Chris. He's a tremendous puncher, but Lemieux's not a tremendous boxer, though.
No, he's not. But what I'm getting at is you don't want to take a chance with a left hook to the body and have your chin open for a good second against a good right-handed puncher. But he took a chance then. But, you know, maybe I'm seeing it wrong. I mean, I thought it was a bad decision. I thought it should have gone at least two more rounds, should have gone to Triple G. But, you know, you can sit here and argue all night on that. That's the way you see it.
And you know what? A lot of people felt that way, that Triple G won by about two rounds. But nobody felt Triple G performed well, though. Even though they thought he won, they didn't think he performed well.
Now, my buddy called me right from Arizona. Doc Skinner called me right from Arizona. He complained about the decision, but we also discussed that, well, he's not the same fighter he was. There's no question about it. Age has caught up with him, I think. And
maybe.
Yeah, he's 36.
I mean, he's definitely
36?
Not in his athletic prime anymore. Yeah, he's 36. So he's definitely not in his athletic prime anymore. But again, man, you know, my thing is this. I think, you know, all the things that he was doing that everybody thought made him so great, we saw him do that in May when he fought Vannis Matarossian and took him out in two rounds. So that's why I don't think it's age, because I just saw him do that 6 months ago. But a couple fights before that, when he fought Canelo and Danny Jacobs, some of those things weren't how come he didn't go to the body against Danny Jacobs? And he cornered Jacobs, but he never really attacked the body. Well, that's what happens when he fights guys that he has to either respect what they're throwing or respect their ability. It's just, you know, when you fight better guys, you kind of can't do some of the same things. And I think the test of whether a guy is going to be an all-time great is, can you do some of those same things once the competition elevates? And although he will be historic because he tied Bernard Hopkins' record for middleweight defenses, I think as far as all of a sudden trying to put him in the same breath as a Harry Greb or a Bernard Hopkins or a Sugar Ray Robinson, I think is ludicrous, because I think all those guys, Danny Jacobs right out of there. Yeah.
He's not – Monzon would have beat him. If he's going to do that against Monzon, first of all, Monzon was 6 foot. And could stay there and jab
his height and range would have given him trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, that's what, man, after after I thought about it, I said, wait a minute, he really isn't in Carlos Monzon's class. He's Sugar Ray's a totally different fighter. Sugar Ray would have never stood
in front of him. I think he's a great fighter, Dr. Chris. Like, I love the fact that he's able to go ahead and revert to his amateur pedigree and revert to his jab, you know what I mean, a straight right hand, and kind of outworking his opponents, you know, from a range. I like the fact that he's not a one-dimensional fighter. But part of what happened, too, is, you know, during the whole thing, they blasted Canelo and said, oh, he ran in the first fight. And then Canelo stood in the middle of the round, and he took the middle of the round from you. He took the middle of the ring from Gennady. Like Roy Jones said, you can't, you know, blast a guy for running all fight, and then in the very next fight, you yourself are the one who's backing up. You know, psychologically, that plays on the judges as well.
Yeah, no, he definitely, he used to be, I thought, was the best cutoff. He could cut the ring in half in a second.
Yeah.
That was his strong point. Moving forward and cutting the ring in half, trapping you, and when you're trying to get out of that corner, he would blast you with them body punches. He doesn't do that anymore. Now maybe the fact that Canelo stood right in front of him and didn't fear him made him, you know, made him a different fighter. So you know, I wanted to hear Teddy Atlas come up with something. And I'd like to hear
Teddy called it a robbery. He called it a robbery.
Oh, he did.
But you know what? That's the other thing too, because of social media. You know, every close fight is not a robbery. Sometimes boxing is a subjective sport, right? And so we all have different opinions. You and I watch the same fight. We don't have any agenda. You saw the 2-round victory for Golovkin. I saw the 2-round victory for Canelo. Neither one of us is getting paid for our opinion. You know, it's just a subjective sport. So sometimes when you have a close fight, it can subjectively go either way. Not everything is a robbery. So I think one of the things that pissed me off is that everybody was like, robbery, robbery, robbery. And he was like, no, you got to really look at this fight in isolation. Don't look at it as a whole vacuum, the positive steroid test. You look at this fight in isolation, it was a close fight that really could be scored multiple, you know, a multitude of ways.
Yeah, you know there are Adelaide Birds out there all the time, and you don't know what the hell she's going to come up with. Or Dave Moretti, who's another guy, you don't know what the hell he's going to come up with. You know, when I see his name, I go, uh-oh, you know, look out. Or Adelaide Bird, who doesn't know what she's doing. And, you know, like you say, they're going to see a fight different than me every time there's a fight.
Every time.
Every time. I know that they're not going to agree with me. So, like I say, I guess I have to realize that Canelo against certain type fighters doesn't bring his A game, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, Tiger Woods used to beat you with his B game and his C game, you know? Then when he lost that, he was just another golfer. Now he's coming back. He's starting to look great again.
Yeah, he's starting to look pretty good again.
Oh, he looked good today. Damn, his putter's back. His short game's back.
Oh. His putter's back.
Tomorrow's going to be
hitting the fairways. Was he hitting the fairways?
Oh, fairways. He hit every damn fairway. He played beautiful today. Putted like a
beast. If he's in the fairways, he's trouble.
When that putting stroke is back, he's trouble. He's tough
to
beat. Man, he was making 12-footers, 15-footers like nothing. And this is, you know, I don't know what to say. When Tiger lost his putting stroke, he lost a lot, but he's getting it back now. I mean, he can beat anybody with it when his putter's on. He used to be a devastating putter, and the same I feel with, Golovkin. He used to be a devastating body puncher, but he's lost it. He's lost it. For some reason, he doesn't have it anymore. And, you know, I like to blame it on age. I'm trying to blame it on age, but maybe he just
It's funny because, you know, I mean, he's obviously in his mid-30s, which is getting past the physical prime for a prize fighter. But, you know, when I saw him, again, just in May against Vanes Medeiros, and no one was saying anything about his age. They said, oh, he came out, and once he decided to take Medeiros out, he did it. And he's going to do the same thing to Canelo. And then he went and he fought Canelo, and he was very reluctant to let his power punches go. You know, it's not just the fact that he's not throwing body shots, but I don't know if you noticed, Canelo has outlanded him in power punches by a far margin over the two fights. He's not letting his power punches go. He's missing a lot, and I think part of maybe his apprehension is the fact that he is missing. So it makes you a little reluctant to punch. And again, you know, we've all been in the ring. When you're punching and any time you open up, somebody counters you, it makes you reluctant to throw. And I think that's kind of what happens to him against Canelo. And I think the same thing happened to him against Danny Jacobs, that if he has to respect the incoming, then he's not that stalking killer. Then he becomes, you know, more of a European-style boxer, I think is what we see out of Golovkin, which is nothing wrong. That's just his B game, that's all.
Yeah. Could be, you know, like I say, I'm anxious to sit and really watch it over again and to see if I, you know, change my opinion. I'd like to sit down with a pencil, you know, just the 12 rounds.
Oh, and really score it?
And see if I come up with the same damn decision I did last time. But
what'll happen is you and I will both rewatch it tonight. You'll have Canelo winning by two, and now I have Golovkin winning by two. So we'll switch opinions.
It could happen. I mean, I was calling, I was blaming it all on De La Hoya fixing the damn fight. Didn't want to get rid of his meal ticket. I'm bitching and moaning like you couldn't believe. And then I remember as a kid when Joe Louis was 35, he had a bald spot in the back of his head, and he wasn't anywhere near the fighter he was in his 20s and early 30s. He wasn't anywhere near it. And, I think over Hopkins has kind of changed our attitude a little bit about age.
Oh, that's
we
a
forget,
good point, yeah.
We forget sometimes that 36 is old.
Yeah.
For the ring, you know? Then again, last night I turned the TV on. I put on channel 373. And what did I see? A full rerun of Lacey and Calzaghe.
Joe Calzaghe. Yeah, I saw that was
and
going
I
too.
It was a great fight. And when I look back, there is one of the all-time greats in his weight division. The guy had blinding hand speed. He just knew how to fight a slugger. And when you look at Lacey, he had a massive upper body. The strength was all on his side. But he just kept him off balance all night long, slapping him with that right hook on the side of the head, knocking him off balance, and killing him with that uppercut. And I said, you know, I didn't realize Calzaghe was one hell of a fighter. Of course, he's one. How many guys have retired undefeated? But
46 and 0.
You know, I started thinking maybe I overrated Triple G. Because when I saw one of the real all-time greats last night, I mean, he was 30-some years old. He didn't lose a step. But he's lightning fast to start with. And there was a fighter. I mean, that was one of the all-time great boxing lessons anybody ever got, was Calzaghe against Lacey. And Lacey was a powerful man. He had a big upper body, strong. But boy, he just got tattooed all night long. It was, his eye was closed.
He ruined Lacey. He ruined Lacey.
Yeah,
He was no good after that.
Never the same. Mentally, he was shot mentally, it was funny. Then I said, well, wait a minute. You know, here's an all-time great. You know, I've seen the all-time greats. I've seen Monzon fight every fight. I saw Robinson. Robinson was greater as a welterweight than he was as a middleweight. Much better welterweight. He was unbeatable as a welterweight. Unbeatable. Absolutely unbeatable. And, here's the all-time greats. But then, you know, you think Triple G, on the all-time. I think maybe I got a little carried away with my opinion.
I think what happens, too, is we become prisoners of the moment. We can only judge a fighter by who he has in front of them. And we really don't get a true indication of how good that fighter is until he gets somebody a little bit more significant in front of him. And, you know, Canelo is an accomplished guy, right? He's very skilled. But Canelo's not going to step up to middleweight and beat Marvin Hagler. I'm sorry, he's not going to step up to middleweight and beat Carlos Monzon. You know what I mean? And I just think, you know, when we look back, sometimes we have a tendency to look at history through rose-colored glasses and, you know, are much more nostalgic about past fighters. And I think sometimes we're just factual. And, you know, I think Golovkin's a good fighter, but I would put him a little closer to McCallum than I would Harry Gregg. You know what I mean? And McCallum's a tremendous fighter, Mike McCallum was. But I think Golovkin is closer to that category than I put him to, you know, the Harry Greb, Carlos Monzon category.
McCallum was a great fighter.
Oh, I loved Mike McCallum.
I saw him do something I never saw before. counter counter a right hand with a left hook. Counter a straight right hand with a left hook. He turned his right shoulder in, and it just he let it miss over his right shoulder. He came back with a left hook and knocked the guy colder than hell. And the guy was a good fighter. What? I never saw anybody counter a punch like that. But Mike
was that the one where he knocked
great.
Donald Curry out? Was that where he knocked the Lone Star Cobra out, Donald Curry?
It might have been that, but I'm trying to remember which fight it was. But I thought, damn, I never saw that move before. Anybody
knock
a guy out.
Yeah.
But Mike McCallum, yeah, he fought some good fighters, and he was a really good fighter. And then I didn't rank him in the all time race, but damn close,
yeah.
You know, upper echelon
yeah.
Anyway. You know,
and to me, that's
even
as
a middleweight, Sugar Ray wasn't one of the. If you had to rate Sugar Ray as a middleweight, just as a middleweight, you wouldn't rank him one of the number one middleweight of all times. But as a welterweight, you got to rank him number one. He just was unbeatable.
Who's the number one middleweight of all? Would you go Greb as number one of all time? At middleweight?
I don't know. Greb was a slap puncher. Harry Greb was a slap puncher. He wasn't a great puncher, but he beat great fighters. Like
yeah.
a guy like the middleweight, the Irish kid, Mickey Walker. Mickey Walker
yeah.
was a
Irish
great
Mickey
middleweight.
Walker.
But Greb and Greg, him and Greb in a showdown, Greb won because Greg was tough. I mean, guys like Jack Dempsey didn't even want to spar with Harry
yeah,
Greb in his gym.
Yeah.
You know?
And Greb had a win over Fitzsimmons, too, right?
No, he had a win over the heavyweight. He was one of the few
Tunney,
guys ever
Tunney.
Beat Tunney.
Yeah,
beat
he had
Gene
a win
Tunney.
Over Tunney. Yeah, he had a win. In fact, that was Tony's only loss was the Greb, right?
Yep.
Wow.
That was it. Now, you know... I could never understand how Mickey Walker could survive as a heavyweight, but he gave these big heavyweights, you know, 198, 200 pound heavyweights. He gave them a hell of a fight, but Greb, Harry Greb beat him, not one boxing writer disputed the decision. They all thought that Greb won. You know, that was one of the highest paying. All-time fights ever outside of the heavyweight division, the Greb, Harry Greb and Mickey Walker. I can't rank Triple G in that category. I don't think Triple G could have gone against any even big light heavyweight. I don't think he could have gone against any big light heavyweight of the past. But, you know, Greb fought them all. He fought them all. He kicked Tunney's butt. Tunney didn't want any parts of him. He literally mauled Tunney. He ruined his style, that pretty style that he had. He ruined it. He muffled it. He crowded him. He knew what the hell. Sometimes style is some guys just can't overcome certain styles.
Right.
Even
though
they're great fighters, they just can't overcome certain style. And Triple G. Against Canelo, he doesn't seem he does well with that style where a guy comes right to him, stands in front of him, and says, okay, let's fight, you know? And he seemed like he loses something. But that wasn't the case of the all-time greats, Stanley Ketchell. If you go back to my father's era, he just swore by Stanley Ketchell. And he died early. He got killed. A guy murdered him, but he was a phenomenal fighter, phenomenal. And then I thought, wait a minute, I can't rank Triple G up there with him. So, you do get attached to a fighter, and sometimes you're blinded by what's really the truth. And the truth probably is right now, history's going to show you that Triple G was not one of the three, you know, best middleweights of all times.
Hey, let me ask a question now. We're talking about Canelo, and word came out earlier this week that Canelo and Lemieux may have a possible meet in December. What do you think of that fight?
Canelo are going to fight?
Yeah, in December.
Wow. Wow. I wouldn't want to stand in front of Lemieux's right hand. He could kill you with that damn right hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's going to tell you a lot. You're going to see how tough Lemieux is because, I mean, how tough Canelo is because he is a brutal right-hand puncher. And he's strong. He's a strong guy. And he's just a little bit taller than Canelo, maybe an inch and a half taller. So that would be a great fight.
Quick
hands
Lemieux's got quick hands too. Yeah, I was saying with Dr. Chris that Lemieux has pretty quick hands too, man.
Yeah,
he's fast with that right hand. That right hand comes in like a damn thunderbolt.
Yes,
you know?
Sir.
I mean, he is a great right hand puncher. I often wondered how he even made 160, but then again, he's 5'9". He's not real tall. And
why does he struggle to make the weight so much? I mean, he weighed 179 on fight night. So.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't know why. I know when Sugar Ray Leonard was fighting Hagler in Las Vegas, my former trainer was there, and he called me two times that week. He said, "You're not going to believe how they're training Hagler. They're training him for speed. They're trying to match. He's trying to match Sugar Ray with speed." He said, "They got him working out two times a day." He said, "They're keeping his weight down at 155, 156. Well, I thought he should have come in a ring at a full 160, as strong as a damn bull, you know, and that's what he was. But he said he's going to lose this fight. He said the there's two brothers, what the hell, Petronelli brothers, what were they? The Petronelli brothers from Massachusetts, they were training them wrong, he said. And they were. I mean, I don't think Hagler was the true Marvin Hagler that particular night that he lost to Sugar Ray. And so, you know, the hell can you say? Well, we're going to say, I'm going to take another look at it. I'm anxious to watch a rerun. You know, a lot of times when I watch a rerun, I don't change my mind because but tonight I'm going to try to give it a nonpartisan opinion. Let's see if it works, you know? So.
Well, there's another fight coming up in December that I wanted to ask you guys about, too, is Dillon White and Derek Chisora. That's set for the December 22nd. Ty, what's your thoughts on that one?
I'm sorry, sir. I'm still kind of driving from New York, so I kind of missed you for a second. Please forgive me.
Okay.
What was the question?
Dillon White and Derek Chisora, December 22nd. What's your thoughts on it?
Oh, they signed the rematch?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll see. You know, I mean, it was a great fight before. I think, honestly, that, you know, I mean, I thought it could have gone either way. I think Dillon White would be the favorite. And, you know, Derek Chisora keeps, you know, getting that last chance saloon thing going, you know, because just when it seems like it's time for him to, you know, be led out to pastures, he has a big performance, like, you know, the knockout over Carlos Takam. So, glad he's getting another big payday. This fight will probably be for the April date against Anthony Joshua if the winner of Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder does not fight Joshua. So, that'll be part of, you know, that's what that's for. That fight is an audition for the Joshua fight in case the winner steps out. So.
Yeah, Fury came out
this
morning.
I'm
so
sorry,
I
have to go because I'm driving.
Okay.
I'm kind of getting quite in traffic now. So I love
Bye.
You guys. I tried
Bye.
To turn in as long as I could. Yeah.
Appreciate it. Drive safe.
All right, I'll talk to you guys. Love you guys.
All right, take care. Chris, what do you think? Eddie Hearn has been pushing Amir Khan. Now he wants Amir. He signed Amir Khan with Kell Brooks for December 1st. What do you think of that fight?
Well, I am not an Amir Khan fan at all. He's too easy to hit. He doesn't have a great chin, and I'm not a. I don't see him win. I don't. I mean, they're recycling him all the time. They're bringing him back. He's gotten chance after chance after chance. But when he comes up with a big fight and a good opponent, he's history. I don't care for him. He's a terrible defensive fighter. He's so easy to hit. And he's got a lot of talent, but he's never been able to put it together. And I think that's what he's going to be judged as. A guy with a lot of talent who really, really never maximized it. And like I say, Christ, a tap on the chin, he's gone. And you need a good chin. You need a good chin in that ring. You can't get in there. Christ, he's been knocked out so many times. I just can't go for him. I have to pick the other guy. Matter of fact, I'd always be on the side of the other guy. You know, I just don't think he's that great a fighter. Put a lot of shows on. They're looking for fighters that have a name. He does have a name, but he's not in that class. I don't think he'll win. I just don't think he will.
Yeah, let's call our first guest here tonight. I'm going to put him, instead of putting him in off the air, I'm going to put him on in the air. We'll just call him right now.
Hello.
Is this the gentleman that just won a fight last Saturday night?
This is him.
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Good, how you doing?
Good. Chris and I are on with you, and we just wanted to go over the fight with you, and first of all, congratulate you. And
thank you.
Secondly, do we congratulate you on anything else yet?
Not yet. We're still waiting. Hopefully, we have an appointment Monday, and then he said he's going to induce us either Monday night or Tuesday, depending on how everything goes. So, next couple of days.
All right. Good. All right. Well, tell us about the fight.
I won. I stopped him. It was a big relief. It was what I was hoping for. He was a rugged guy. I felt really good. I was mentally so focused, and I felt great. Not surprisingly, but I felt great from how I had to adapt and change my training, and how I wasn't really in the gym as much as I probably should have been for a fight in general. Everything just worked out. I felt great, and we got the win.
Yeah. Now you had mentioned to me off air about changing your style of fighting, your camp that you were doing. Can you tell our fans, you put more into cardio than you did mitt work, right?
Cardio was literally 90% of the training. I mean, weekends, every Saturday I would go to the gym and spar. I mean, Saturday was the sparring day and the bag work and whatever else I would do. I mean, but Monday through Friday, I have a double M bag, a bike, a ab bench, and a pull-up bar and a treadmill in the garage. So, I mean, whatever you can get out of that, that's between my sprints on lunch break and my road, my cardio, that's how I train pretty much for the fight. And like I said, Saturdays and maybe a few Sundays we would double up and hit the gym. But, I mean, that was really the cut and dry of how the training went for this fight.
Good, well, if it worked, it worked.
yeah. I feel great.
No pushover,
so.
That's for sure.
Nah, he wasn't. He fought a lot. He had a good resume. I mean, I'm not too wrapped up like everybody else. You know, a lot of people. You know, I talk to a lot of people that don't know boxing, but at the same time, everybody thinks they know it. So everybody's an analyst anymore. So I mean, what do I know? But I mean, everybody looks at records and that's what sells a lot of people. But I mean, they don't look at where the wins or the losses came from. I mean, he had 12 wins, but eight of them were knockouts. So it's like, you know what I mean? And his losses, he had 14 losses, but how many, I don't even remember how many guys were undefeated or big names that he fought. So, I mean, that gives him experience, a lot more experience over me and half the guys he lost to. I mean,
sure.
That already gives him, you know, him being in the ring with those type of guys is just something I can't relate to. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, it was definitely a step up for coming off a loss, and it felt good. It felt good to get that win under my belt, and you know, especially how I feel, my conditioning. Now I have time to just add to it and become even in better shape. And I felt great. I mean,
great.
It only went 3 rounds,
good.
But you know, we threw a lot of punches. I feel, and I mean, I feel good. So now it's just more time I can actually work on things that that I feel like I need to work on.
I caught a couple of the comments that the Journal had done, the Wilmington Journal had done on it, and from the sounds of it, you took command from the first bell on, and which is exactly what you said you were going to do. So I'm sure that that training has done you well. Chris, you got some questions for Joey.
Yeah, well, you know, Joe, when you're set in a certain style, and your style is what you're bringing to the ring, cardio is 90%. It becomes very important. That's really all you have to do. You have to really, have yourself in great condition, because you know how you're going to fight. You know what you're going to do. Your opponent's style is already set. So I don't think doing extra cardio work is a negative. I think it's a positive. And if that's how you're training, doing more cardio, stick to it. You know, nobody can argue with great conditioning. You can outwork a guy. You can outwork a better opponent sometimes. A guy that's got more experience and maybe something you don't have, you can outwork him. You can get a win by outworking him because your conditioning is better. So, cardio, there's nothing wrong with that. That's very, very important. I don't think road work is as important as people say, but I think gym work, good hard work in a gym, exercising and doing heavy gym work. I notice guys are starting to change their style, and they're starting to hit these big tires, flip them around. They're trying to get their cardio, get their strength together. I notice they published Klitschko's workout. His entire workout for a week in one of the sports magazines, and I was shocked at how he trains. He swims. He swims. He doesn't run in the morning. He broke tradition there. He said, "I don't like to run in the morning. I get up in the morning. I don't feel like running." He said, "Doesn't do me a damn bit of good." He said, "I fight 11 o'clock at night. What the hell I want to train in the morning for?" So he does his cardio. He does most of his training at night after 6 o'clock. And he doesn't run. But he does a lot of swimming. He alternates, he does more cardio than sparring. Let me put it that way. And he was always a well-conditioned guy. He went the distance quite a few times as a heavyweight and a big heavyweight. So his cardio, he really put cardio up in the number one spot in his training methods. He did a little weightlifting during the week. He always did some of that. And I was shocked at the amount of time he spent swimming for his cardio. He said that does
well,
more
you had
cardio.
Swimming to your regimen too, didn't you, Joe?
Yeah. I mean, I was. It wasn't as much as I would like, but I definitely did. I was doing it pretty good for a while when I was able to get in there. And I mean, you can feel it. I mean, it's definitely, especially because it's like it doesn't put pressure on your body and your joints like it like everything else does. I mean, it's just you know, you can just go in there and I don't know all the methods or I don't really have good technique of swimming like that, but I mean, I know, you know. You could feel it when you go in the water and come up, and I would try to do different routines. I try to switch it up so I could use different muscles and I would feel it. But I mean, I definitely felt it. I mean, I didn't make it like a prime. I didn't really, like I said, cardio was my primary focus on this fight. But I mean, when I did do swimming, I could feel it. I could definitely tell the difference.
Mhm. Joe, what's
oh,
your
oh yeah,
next,
it's one time in intercollegiate I was when I was in college, I boxed a swimmer. He ran he was a very good miler, a mile runner, and then he swam in the winter. And I boxed him in the intramurals. He had no punch at all, couldn't break an egg, but damn, he wearied the hell out, you know, with his conditioning. You'd get tired hitting him. I mean, he ran around, I couldn't catch the son of a gun. Was a hard guy to fight. I mean, he ran a 4:06 mile before someone broke the 4-minute barrier, and 4:06 was unbelievable. And
yeah.
And he swam the butterfly. I watched him swim. I mean, phenomenal condition. And I said to myself after I fought him, I said, I'll never step in the ring again unless I'm in better shape than the guy I'm fighting. And I always believed that. And I always thought I was in better shape than the guy I fought. You know? So cardio is great. Cardio is great. You just got to have the desire in you to do it. I mean, it's hard damn work. You know, your dad was not a conventional trainer. Let's put it that way. He didn't train in a conventional style. But Joe had a lot of 10-round fights, and he was going full speed at the end. I mean, I remember Joe when he was young, when he was fighting. He was in great condition. He fought some damn big fighters, big 165-pounders that were good. And, you know, went 10-round draws. And I saw a lot of his fights. He was in good shape. And Joe didn't run a lot. He wasn't what I'd call he didn't max the amount of running. But, man, he could time it. He was good for 10 rounds. He was in there all the way. He was in there all the way. And so you're copying a good is he giving you any work advice in your training, Joe?
Yeah. I mean, that's my trainer. That's who runs the show. I mean, I try to throw in.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, does he run you to death?
Nah, I actually, you know, I do it on my own. I don't like, I like to push myself. I don't want to, it sounds weird, but I mean, I like to, I feel like I need to push myself at some point. I can't always rely on other people to push me. I need to be able to have some motivation because, you know, I don't want anybody else to be like, oh, it's time to, especially it's hard because it's my dad. So it's like, you know, my whole life, he's always told me things to do. So it's like, oh, go do this, go do that. Well, the older I got, I learned how to say no. So now it's like, now I don't, you know, and it's different. Like we have a different type of relationship with, you know, I try not to bring like the father son thing into it. I try to keep that out as much as possible, which is, it's impossible, but I mean, I try to. I do all my conditioning, all my stuff before or after I get to the gym. I want that to be done so I can focus on what he has to tell me. What do I need to work on? What's he want me to work on? You know what I mean? So
yeah, he works.
That's kind of
where on your technique and style. Yeah, but he had, early in his career, he had a lot of trouble breathing, and he was trying to stay at 146. Finally, he just gave up trying to make 146 and went to the middleweight. Was a much stronger middleweight than he was as a welterweight. He was a much stronger. He really developed as a middleweight. But he turned pro late in his life. I always thought it was a little bit late when he turned pro. He fought in the amateurs for a long time. And in the beginning, he didn't breathe good out of his nose. His nose was broken. And then he did get it repaired. And he probably told you that story 100 times. Carmen Graziano threw him in a ring with a ranked light heavyweight to make the show at Joe's expense. And he hurt his nose again. But and he's telling you that it's a true story. I was so aggravated at Carmen, I felt like hitting him with the damn stool. I don't know why the hell he did that. He loved the, you know, he was always on the promoter's side, I thought. Too many times he favored the promoter over his own damn fighter. And I never forgave Corman for that, to be honest with you. Your father had some great fights, and Corman, I don't know. I wasn't happy about the way Corman worked with him. You probably hear the complaints yourself. But,
yeah.
You know, and they're justified, believe me. Believe me, they're justified.
Joe, what's your next outlook, who are you going to look for?
What's that?
What's your next, who do you think will be your next fight?
Well, I thought I wanted to fight Dorian Spivey.
Mm-hmm.
I think I said last time, you know, once I got this win, I wanted to start calling people out, and maybe not necessarily to that extent, but I at least wanted to get good matchups. Like I said, you know what I mean, I'm getting older, that whole spiel, but I mean, I'm coming off a pretty big win, and you know, it was almost a year from my last fight, so I think they said either they're trying to go back either late November or the first of December, so depending on when they, not that the date matters, but those are the two dates that they're juggling on bouncing back, so that's like a 10 to 12 week wait, I guess, turnaround for the fight. So, you know, I'm going to talk to them and see what they think. I wouldn't be against it. It would have to be more than a six rounder, though. I mean, I've been fighting sixes my last like four or five fights. So, I mean,
sure.
If they're gonna give me a, you know, if they're gonna approve of that, you know, I want at least an eight out of it, and I want to make it something. I want to make it something. You know what I mean? Like, I feel great. Usually after fights, I go out and endure myself a little too much and have to start back over from training. But with where I'm at in my career and life and everything, like, I don't want to do that again. I finally understand that I feel great and I want to keep running with it. And I just want to add to where I'm at. So I don't want to piss it all away and have to start back over to get back in shape. So I just want to stay where I'm at and just go and just keep my foot on the gas. So, I mean, that's really the only thing. That's really the only guy I would like to fight. I mean, I don't know if that's something that they're willing to put me in there with, or if they're willing to make that happen, or if he even would take it. So, I mean, once I get a date, then I guess I'll see what they think about that and see what the promotion side, and you know what I mean. So, I mean, I told Diane, you know, after this one, like, I want to start getting some big fights, and I want to start doing something. I want to start, you know, the bigger that the fight is, the more I can bring to the table. And that's where I'm at with it. I don't want to keep fighting 6-round fights my whole life. I haven't fought nothing else more than that. I've had 19 fights. So what's, you know what I mean? I don't want to keep fighting 6-round fights anymore. So whether they find somebody else or they're cool with, you know, if they can figure out how to bring him to me, or, you know, a couple other names that I might want to think of. I mean, whatever they think makes sense, then I'll let them figure that part out. But, you know, I'm going to leave it up to them. Once I get the date, I'll push the issue and see where we can go from there.
Right.
Because it's going to be hard.
Would it be back at Okeson, or would you be going?
We're going to stay in there.
Looking at the 2300 or where?
Nah, we don't really do. We haven't done Philly in years just because of the commission out there. Mm-hmm. We're trying to build up in Delaware. So, I mean, we'll stay at the Hocast and Powell for now. The Chase Center wants too much money. They don't really work with you, because that would honestly be a nice ideal location with the way that they're building around there. And we've had fights there, and it's been great turnouts. But they want a lot of money down before you even.
Yeah.
Before you even talk to them. So, you know, that's out of my control with that. But, I mean, I think it would be great.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think the Hocast is a great venue. It was in a good location. And, you know, it wasn't a bad crowd. So,
is that out on,
I guess, I'm probably
going to
stay there.
Or is it?
Nah, that's up at Hocast. I actually don't know the address. I probably shouldn't know the address, but it's up and all.
That would be 141?
Yeah, I think you take 141 all the way up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so. Good. I mean, it's nice. It's a nice little spot.
Mhm. Well, you know, you're always on my mind, and I always keep an eye out for you, so that when you get something lined up, just give me a call, and we'll get you right back on and let everybody know what you're doing, and you know, I appreciate you always giving us the time that you do, and let us know how you make out on Tuesday, and we'll see if we get something up there to you and your lovely bride.
Yeah, so, definitely. I will. I love coming on.
Good.
Hey, Joe.
Good.
I got one thing to say. When you were a much younger guy, maybe in your 13, 14, 15 age category, you were trying to play football, and you were mad because you were too small. Well, when I met you the other night at your mother's party, you got a lot taller. How tall are you now?
Oh, man, I didn't get too much taller.
You got
shorter.
You play linebacker now.
Nah, you just got shorter, that's all.
I looked at it, I said, damn, Joey got a lot taller than when he was a little guy in seventh grade. I mean,
yeah, seventh grade.
I
grew a little bit since seventh grade, but that's not much. It's not much. I'm probably. I mean, I'll take 5'8".
Are you 5'8"? Five look like me.
Yeah.
But you're close to 5'10".
Nah.
No, 5'8". Well,
I don't think I ever.
Yeah, for 140 pounds, 5'8", 5'9" is good. You know.
Yeah. I mean, I was able to get under 140 too. So I mean, it was good. I mean, you know, this weather, like I said, has been helping me out. So, you know, I feel good. I feel good at
that's
that.
That's great,
so,
Joe.
Well,
all right. Well, you know, you got to fight that 8th rounder. When are you going to fight your first 8th rounder? Huh?
The next fight, hopefully.
Then you better get on that cardio.
That cardio is every day.
And don't let yourself get out of shape either.
Nah,
that's not good. In between bouts, don't let yourself, you know, stay with it. There's a lot of guys it's too damn hard to get back in conditioning again. It wears on you mentally.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it again. When I'm ready to hang them up, I think that's when I'll stop training. But I want to keep. I'm running with this momentum for the next however long it goes from here. I don't want to. There is no more starting over. That's pretty much a negative sign. Like, you know, that's when it is. And I have a couple more things. I need to get me some jewelry before I do. I need something to at least hang up somewhere in my house. So I mean. There's a couple more things I want to get before I actually relax, and you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
At least my body feels good for the most part, and, you know, like I said, I still have a couple more things, a couple more people that I want to at least get in there with before anything else happens. So I don't think about when it's time to stop. It's just when's the next one.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's much easier to get in shape for a fight. If you don't let yourself go in the middle,
mm-hmm.
you know, much easier.
It's
a lot more enjoyable too. You know, when you
absolutely.
You know, you get more fights. You know, I know when you said you did. It's been a year. That's unusual. That's a long length of time. You got to fight.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to go 8 rounds, you're going to have to fight more often. You know.
Yeah.
And so you can't fight sixes all the time. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But you're on the right track, Joe. Say hello to the gang.
Yep.
I did. Your father wrote me a nice note. After I, you know, when I saw you and your mom and everybody again,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I
mm-hmm.
enjoyed being there that night. I got a kick out of talking to Nicky. It's good seeing him again. So, you know, say hello to the rest of the family, okay?
I will.
Let me take
a
guess. You were an hour late
take
for
care.
That one too. Great.
All right.
Hey, guys, we're up against there. Like, Joe, thanks a lot for coming on. We really appreciate it. We wish you a lot of luck coming up this next week, and we know your next fight is going to be another winner for you. So we'll get you back on, and we'll talk about that. And maybe when you decide you are going to hang it up, that you'll come on with us as a weekly guest host.
All right. Well, yeah, we can talk. We don't talk about hanging them up yet.
No, I didn't mean that. No. Whatever you want to come back, whenever you want to come on to be a guest host, let me know.
Hey,
we're always
okay.
Looking for good,
we'll talk.
Good talent. Yeah, good.
All right.
Good.
All right,
thank you guys.
Right,
I appreciate it.
Care. All right.
Okay. See you guys.
Uh, All right, Frank. I went to my grandson's football game and ran home, and I'm going to go out and get something to eat. All right.
Okay, Chris.
I'll talk to you next week. All right, guys.
Appreciate
I'll see you. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please acknowledge them. Let them know you know they're there. A handshake, a wink, or the best thing you can say is, be safe, my brother, my sister, or thank you for your service. These programs are dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Endler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anofa Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogle, Longwood Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Robert Germain, Weber, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Fikas, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardeth Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccia, Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Ballard, Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Laterno, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Bill Gentry, Highlands County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Clay Zerba, Clay County Deputy Sheriff, Sheriff's Department. My brothers and sisters, I'll only be 10-7 at this point in time. At some time, we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields, and the winds be light. And may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night. God bless. Have a great week.